Elizabeth Barrett Browning wrote, "Earth's crammed with heaven, and every common bush afire with God. But only he who sees takes off his shoes. The rest sit round it and pluck blackberries." The members of Friendship Presbyterian Church longed to awaken to the heaven-crammed earth. So Pastor Shauna Bowman constructed a 5-foot bush out of a building tube, foam, and wire. She lit it up with Christmas lights and paper flames. And then members of the congregation asked one another, "What is our burning bush?" Each person plucked a flame with words of mission on it: to speak up in truth, to work for peace, to forgive. We might ask ourselves, what is our burning bush? If we have heard this story from Exodus, we generally see it as a great call story. Moses, who knows all kinds of reasons he shouldn't be called, is led by God to the work of freedom and justice, bringing the captives out of Egypt, changing the world. We are reminded that God calls ordinary people. God calls us. Even if we don't feel up to the task, God empowers and leads and goes with us. For Moses, though, this does not feel like an inspiring, heartwarming story. He sees this great sight, this bush that is on fire and yet does not burn up. So he has to check it out. He approaches and hears a voice calling his name. "Here I am," he answers, and his life will never be the same. God begins to give Moses instructions. "Come no closer. Take off your sandals." In Moses, Man of the Mountain, Zora Neale Hurston imagines the scene. Moses loosened his shoes and took them off without taking his eyes off the burning bush that did not wither. Moses stood barefooted and bareheaded and trembled with awe. It is at this bush, this place in the middle of the wilderness, that God invites Moses into conversation. The burning bush is the site of God's hospitality. "Take off your shoes, Moses, and let's talk." We have a couple of dear friends who have 2 small children. Whenever we visit them at their home, as we walk through the door, the children begin telling us, "You have to take your shoes off. You have to take off your shoes." The parents are dismayed, even embarrassed, and they tell us, "It's okay, you do not have to do that." But of course, we take off our shoes. The children know the rules of being in this household, of what it means to be at home here. We take off our shoes, and we realize that we are standing on holy ground. When we are welcomed into conversation, into the lives of others, that is sacred. That is holy. Moses reminds us that God invites us into conversation, that we are invited into the life of God. So Moses takes off his shoes. God says, "I am the God of your father and your mother, whose brave creativity kept you alive. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." And Moses hides his face because he is afraid to look at God. But up to this point, he has looked. He has stood. He's even talked with God already before he hides his face. Terence Fredheim explains, "Moses hides his face, but certainly not for long. For the next few chapters, Moses and God engage in what can only be called a face-to-face encounter." We approach God. We approach this life with reverence and awe. God's call to hospitality calls us not to hide our faces. We hear over and over in the pages of Scripture, entertain strangers because they might be angels. Give even a cup of cold water in the name of Christ. I was hungry and you fed me, thirsty and you gave me something to drink. And on and on and on. Hospitality calls us to see God in the faces of others. But I wonder, are we sometimes afraid to look? Are we afraid of the need we might encounter? Are we afraid to see God in the faces of those who are different from us, racially, economically, politically? Are we afraid to look at God? Lynn Gottlieb was born in Pennsylvania 4 years after World War II finished. When she was 15 years old, Lynn went on an exchange trip to Israel. And after that experience, she yearned for an end to the strife between Jews and Arabs. She went on to college and seminary and became a rabbi of Reform Judaism. Concerned with the way things were going after 9/11, Rabbi Lynn Gottlieb co-founded the Muslim-Jewish Peace Walk. At the time, she was serving as the rabbi of a synagogue in Albuquerque, New Mexico. In planning the peace walk, she worked with a man named Abdul, who was a lay leader at a nearby mosque. Together, they organized a walk from the synagogue to the mosque. The Muslim-Jewish Peace Walk has grown. It includes rituals of sacred walks or pilgrimages for Jews and Muslims. Participants walk several miles from mosque to church to synagogue or the other way around. Each walker, each participant, is welcomed into each house of prayer in order to honor each other's faith and to pray for peace. Traveling the distance between these places of worship on foot helps people realize that the distance between each other is not as great as they might have believed. Walking together, being welcomed, and offering welcome helps participants truly see each other and care about each other. To somehow see God in every face is radical hospitality. To give and receive hospitality is sincere love. We can rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn when we see them as God's own. That's hard work. And Moses knows a thing or two about hard work. So far, he has done what God has asked. Come no closer. Take off your shoes. These instructions are easy enough. God continues. Go back to Egypt. Talk to Pharaoh. Lead my people out. Now Moses says, whoa, this is too much. We read Paul's instructions in Romans. Love one another, bless those who persecute you, persevere in prayer, extend hospitality. And we say, whoa, this is too much. We have some questions. Who am I to do this work? We have plenty of reasons God should call someone else. God doesn't give up on us. Instead, God promises to be with us. And so we ask, who are you? If people ask why we're demonstrating love, why we're extending hospitality, why we persevere in prayer, who do we say called us to do these things? We have plenty of questions. Thankfully, God is okay with our questions. Someone once asked a rabbi, why is it that you rabbis put so much of your teaching in the form of a question? And the rabbi replied, what's wrong with a question? The rabbi might be on to something. Moses asks God, who are you? What is your name? The answer Moses receives is like a boomerang, a name that takes the form of a larger question redirected to him. It is as though God is saying, if you want to know my name, come with me and spend the rest of your life finding out. God says in Exodus, "I have seen the misery of my people. I have heard their cry. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them." God still says today, "I have seen, I have heard their cries, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them." Will Willimon reminds us, the idea of deliverance is God's before it is anyone else's. All the initiative is with Yahweh. But then comes a surprising turn. God says, "I will send you." The African American lectionary schedules this passage from Exodus 3 on Beloved Community Day, or Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. In talking about this text, Reverend Dr. Richard Wills Sr. says, "It is a poignant reminder that much of God's liberating action is accomplished via the agency of human hands, heads, and hearts. We are called into this liberating work. It's the work of genuine love. It's the work of true hospitality." All this talk of hospitality might bring images to mind of hotels or restaurants, the hospitality industry. It might make us think of welcoming people into our homes, back when we could do that, or being welcomed into the homes of friends or family. Yes, all of that. And hospitality is much deeper. In her book, Making Room: Recovering Hospitality as a Christian Tradition, Christine Pohl says, "Hospitality is not so much a task as a way of living our lives and of sharing ourselves. Part of hospitality includes recognizing and valuing the stranger or guest. Hospitality practices in the early Christian community were to portray a clear message, that of equality, transformed relations, and a common life." As we read Paul's list in Romans 12, the overarching idea is love. Let love be genuine. Love one another. Hospitality is how we put love into action. It is opening ourselves to the other. And hospitality leads to call, because it is in the opening up that we hear, that we notice, that our eyes are opened to need. The Message Bible paraphrases Romans 12:13 as, "Be inventive in hospitality." What a line for 2020. Be inventive in hospitality. That is a perfect description of how this church and the church around the world has adapted during this pandemic. How we have learned in new ways to be the church, to do church. And we are still learning. Holy Trinity Lutheran Church is in the Longfellow neighborhood of South Minneapolis. It was proud of its long history of keeping its doors open, no matter the obstacle. Facing snowstorms, I cannot even imagine, Holy Trinity always held services, and her members always showed up. Back in March, they had to make the difficult decision to stop having in-person services because of the pandemic, as we well know. The church doors were closed. Worship was shared online from a distance. In May, their church council made the decision, based on the information available to them, that they would not gather in person until at least September. In late May, protests began in their city. Social uprising took over the news and the attention of the congregation. Fires raged in the neighborhood, and many buildings and businesses were destroyed in the flames. Pastor Ingrid Rasmussen received a call one night saying the neighborhood needed the church open, like in 20 minutes. They needed Holy Trinity to be used as a medic station. Church staff and volunteers sprang into action. They provided space and welcome for medical help, counseling, and basic things like water for people to drink. The needs of the community kept changing over those days. They went from being a food-rich community to a food desert overnight. Associate Pastor Angela Kabeb joked that churches aren't known for being agile. Holy Trinity had to act quickly, though, if they were going to care for their community. They had to be inventive with their hospitality. So they transitioned into a distribution site for food and supplies for the neighborhood. At first, there were a few hundred people coming to receive supplies. That number kept growing until Holy Trinity was serving thousands of people each week. Pastor Ingrid remembers one of those early weeks. She says, "As we prepared to open Holy Trinity's food distribution, there were hundreds of people in line. These were neighbors with real needs. We could feel the energy of the crowd rising. You know the energy that I'm talking about. Competitive energy that tells us that there isn't enough." One of the English-speaking volunteers jumped up on a table to address the crowd. Another Spanish-speaking leader stood to his left, and a Somali-speaking volunteer stood to his right. The English speaker addressed the crowd, yelling, "There is enough!" The Spanish speaker offered the promise in Spanish, and then the assurance was spoken in Somali. And then each of them said it again. Then the crowd gathered, began to repeat it back, each guest in their own language. It took on the form of call and response. Pastor Ingrid says, "I could feel competitive empire energy transform into something new, something that felt like community, something that felt like the commonwealth of God." We are called into this work of giving and receiving inventive hospitality. We are invited on a journey with the God who says, "I am." We can hope for justice because God is. We can extend gracious hospitality to the stranger, compassion to the suffering, and friendship no matter what, because the God who declared, "I am," partners with ordinary human beings to do extraordinary things. We have the privilege and responsibility to act and to be in concert with God. Amen.